We'll do this anyway.
Let's overreact. I'm so ready.
You had a chance to watch the Guardians game yesterday. They beat Kansas City in 10. 7-4 the final. I still can't stand the Ghost Runner, but that's all right. It gives me a new year to not like the Ghost Runner. In extra innings, again, I'm a big proponent of Ghost Runner after 12 innings. Dan, can you concur with that with me?
Yeah, I can find that.
All right, after 12 innings, if you want to put the Ghost Runner out there, that's fine.
I get behind that. I'm good with it.
All right, and I'll say 12 innings to bargain back to 11. How's that sound? I just don't think when you go to the 10th inning, you need to have that. I know they want to speed up the game. What was yesterday, like 244 or something like that?
It was a even COVID with extra innings thing that for some reason we kept because teams complained about their bullpens getting blown out in series and all of that kind of stuff. And some of it I understand, but there's another part of me that thinks there was a better answer than us all throwing our hands up in the air and deciding to put a zombie runner at second base.
Yeah, let's play, you know, Sunday night soft pitch.
Right. Yeah, it makes softball sense when you have to get off slow the pitch field so that the next group can get on. I get it in that regard. But, yeah, I can't stand a thing either. But here we are. It's in the rules. It's a reality.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, it didn't matter. It helped the Guardians. So, you know, you go back and watch yesterday's game. All right, give me your overreactions to the Guardians undefeated so far this season. I know, you know, there's only 161 to go, but they are undefeated. Let's not forget that.
Emmanuel Clase is fine.
Why do you say he's fine?
Because the velocity was right where it was last year. The breaking stuff was right where it was last year.
What did he top out at yesterday? You know?
Topped out at 101. Yeah. Or 100.1, I should say, is where he topped out according to StatCast data. There was a botched play in between. Jose Ramirez probably should have had that ball. Vinny Pasquatina hopped on him. Like, yes, I know we're in a world where two-pitch pitchers are getting hit a little bit more than they used to be, but he's fine. Don't freak out. It's not like, oh my gosh, he screwed up in the playoffs and now he screwed up on round one. He's broken. Like,
no, I don't think he's
pump
broken.
The brakes.
All right. I'm not overreacting. I do think it's something to keep your eye on, though. Can you come back to that?
Something to keep your eye on? Okay. I'll listen to that one. Sure. Anytime a closer blows a save, you keep an eye on it. But it's like, I am not freaking out. And by that, I mean, like, there should be some level of wiggle room with Emmanuel Clase. Like, dudes don't. There's a reason why there's one Mariano Rivera and not, like, 20 Mariano Riveras. Like, there's a reason why. Because guys who throw like that are so rare. And I think Emmanuel Clase is a rare, rare person, but it's not Mariano Rivera. Okay, that's why I'm like, pump the brakes. It's okay. He's still one of the best closers in baseball. He's still borderline unhittable. Everybody settle down. It's going to be okay.
All right, I'm going to give you this one. What's more the norm after one game? I can't believe I'm asking this question.
Let's do it.
Kyle Manzardo, the amazing day he had yesterday with three hits, a double, a triple, and a home run, or Brian Rocchio just coming away with a walk yesterday? What's more the norm? It's a good question. I like that we play this game if you want to. More the norm.
I like that. I thought Rocchio had a couple good at-bats as well. Like, I didn't think he looked overmatched. I didn't think he looked lost. I want Kyle Manzardo to get 400 at-bats. Are you with me on that? You want to see more of Kyle Manzardo?
Like, yeah.
Get him 400 plate appearances, please. Because I think that dude can hit, and I think he can help out, and I don't think he's going to hit, you know, what did they say? He was on pace to hit like seven, you know, or what was it? I saw it floating around where he was like on pace to hit 300 home runs or something along those lines. Like, it's not going to do anything like that, but like, the guy's a really good hitter, and he clearly found something in the playoffs, and I think you're going to see it the rest of the way, and I think he's going to be a really good hitter, and I think he hits 20 to 25 out, but like,
I was more excited about the fact that he's on pace to have, what, 648 RBI.
That's it. That was the one that I saw floating around. But, like, the Rocchio front is it's one game, pump the brakes. I think he's going to be fine. Are you okay with Brian Rocchio? Like,
yeah, I'm going to. I mean, what else are we going to do right now? I'm okay with it.
You could do other things.
Who didn't love Brian Rocchio in the playoffs last year? Who didn't? I did.
And he had a good spring.
And it made me forget about the regular season for the times I'd be like, oh, boy. Don't we have anybody else that could hit? I there were times I thought that throughout the season. And then during the playoffs, I'm like, you know what? Gamer, look at this. Showed up for when it really counts. Mm-hmm. And we need him right now. And you know, I don't know. He got a big confidence boost from me. I'm not that he needed it from me, but he boosted my faith in him during the playoffs last year. And you know, you're batting ninth. So what'd you think about Ramirez hitting second? Overreaction theory.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. I hope they keep it that way. I hope he keeps hitting there. Reason being is that you end up with more at-bats. I know it's not a huge difference between two and three, but at least you got somebody on before him. In modern baseball, you want your best hitter hitting second. That's where you hit him.
Why? Explain that to somebody that someone said, what do you mean modern baseball? What is that supposed to mean?
So the best way to describe this is that remember when you used to build the lineup in Little League?
Mm-hmm.
And you would always just go, okay, I'm going to take all of my best kids and I'm going to hit them at the top, and all of my worst kids, I'm going to hit them at the bottom.
Oh, no, the captain always got to hit first if you rotated the captain by day. Well, but they were also the one that had to bring, well, back in my day, they would bring pop and donuts for after the game. Now I'm sure it's all healthy stuff.
Well, and you always had the one coach who was like, I'm going to spread the outs throughout my lineup, so then that way I don't have a bottom that's a mess. Like, you would always have that coach who, like, overthought that stuff too.
No, my favorite was this one. Coach, why am I hitting eighth? Oh, double cleanup, man. That's why you're in this spot.
Double
when the coach
cleanup.
In the back of the coach's mind is like, kid, you suck, and I think you're going to give us three outs every time you get up to the plate. So
because you have a lot of great qualities, and hitting a baseball isn't one of them. It's the same general idea that we did back in Little League is now finding its way into Major League Baseball, where it's like, all right, the better players hitting at the top of the lineup will get more at bats than the guys at the bottom of the lineup. So have those guys up there at the top of the lineup so that your best players get the most at bats. That's why. So, like, you know, we would always think, okay, so the leadoff guy is your fast guy. Now it's like the leadoff guy is your best hitter who probably is a little quick too. Like, or your guy who gets on base the most. You know, your second hitter is the guy who's the most versatile with the bat, can bunt, can hit and run, can do all that kind of stuff. Now it's like your second hitter is the guy who can hit the ball over the fence because, and is your best hitter because we want him to have the second most at bats. Like, that's the way you got to think of it now, if that makes more sense.
Yeah,
does that make sense?
No, it totally makes sense. I get it. I still think you want somebody fast who's at the top of your lineup and the bottom of the lineup too. I don't know why. I always think 1 and 9 should always be fast. Because if 9 gets on, then you've got the hitters to get him in on the other side. I don't know why. I don't know. Maybe that's just old school philosophy. Do you agree with that? The 9 needs to be fast too. Or maybe 9 is the guy that can't hit, so he's got to compensate for that by being fast.
Maybe now that we've thrown out the idea of having the pitcher having to hit, yeah, I could get behind that, sure. But the guy who's down there is down there because you don't want him to hit. I mean, I know that sounds really blunt and kind of mean, but that's where it is. In the same way that, like, you know, everybody listening out there has filled up the Little League lineup and you've gone, okay, who do we really not want to hit? Okay, you're going to hit second to last so that it doesn't look like I'm totally
burying
you. Yeah,
but should we really be doing this in the bigs? I mean, there's a reason why these guys make professional baseball.
Because at one point,
those guys were probably the best hitter on their team and probably the best hitter on the team that they played on for a decade.
Yeah.
Think about that. I mean, you know, it's the whole Casey Blake thing, right? Like, how many guys would say Casey Blake was 4A when he was here? And there were days when I was in the dugout getting ready to do post-game interviews with the Indians, and I would hear fans, even in Cleveland, they were just all over Casey screaming 4A this, and why aren't you in the minors, and why aren't you? And there were times I wanted to turn around and just go, you realize that the guy you're ripping right there, and I know you paid a lot of money for those seats, is probably 10 times better than any guy you've ever stepped on the field with.
It's very true.
And I was like, when people would start heckling and stuff like that, yeah, it's funny, but I didn't pay to come to a game to listen to you heckle. I got to be honest with you. So if you're a heckler guy and you're doing it more than once or twice a game, uncle, that, like, no one wants to hear from you. Like, if you throw out one good zinger, all right, that's funny. I can live with it. That's creative. But if you're throwing out 4 or 5 zingers a game, like, no one came there to see you, I can guarantee you. And if they did, you should be doing stand-up somewhere where someone will pay money to see you go heckle. I'm that guy. Sorry.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to be mean about it, but if you feel the need to heckle at these games, like, what are you doing? What's wrong with your life? Sorry.
You're fine. Hitting is...
More than once. Look, I appreciate a good zinger every once in a while.
Hitting is really, really hard. And if you ever need proof of that, just... Go to YouTube, type in Pitching Ninja, and enjoy.
It's
really hard.
You want a dose of reality about how hard it is to hit in Major League Baseball? Just go to a batting cage where they can zing that thing up to even 80 or 90.
Mm-hmm.
And then see if they can put it up to 100. Because I'm telling you, when someone's throwing 100 miles an hour at you, You don't see the ball.
Well, and
we see it on TV like it looks like it's so easy. It's not.
To totally derail this, Chipper Jones was on a podcast and they asked him about hitting now, and he's like, there's no way in hell I could hit now. He's like, I couldn't do it. He's like, the fact that they've got 95 to 100 perpetually coming, the breaking balls they're throwing now, these pitch labs, all that kind of stuff. He's like, no way. He's like, I couldn't hang now. There's no way I would be able to hang with these guys. Like, hitting is really hard. So that's the other side of it with all that kind of stuff. I liked Jose Hinton's. Like, did you like it? Because you come at it from a little bit more of a traditional standpoint.
No, I'm good with it. Look, the first thing I thought of when I saw it in the lineup yesterday, I was like, okay, good. They're going to get him more at-bats. That was the only thing I could think of. Like, I don't have a problem with that. Are you okay with your three hitter going 1-for-5? Can Lane Thomas do better than that? I don't know. I'm sure. Again, it's one
That's
game.
That's my question.
It's one game.
Lane Thomas hitting third was a little funky. I don't know if I love that.
Who else are you putting there?
Carlos Santana.
I mean, he did go 2-for-4
heck
yesterday.
After what he did yesterday, Kyle Manzardo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But let's face it. I mean, Manzardo may have seen good pitches because Santana was ahead of him in the lineup.
That's a good point.
I mean, but together, those guys were 4 of the 7 hits. So, or 4 of their 10 hits. Sorry. They had 10 hits yesterday. Is that right?
Might be.
No, runs. Well, I'm looking at runs. But let's say I was 4 of 10, too. Yeah, they had 4 hits each. Manzardo had 3 and Santana had 1. Give me any other overreaction theater stuff you may have from one game.
The big thing that I would take away from it, especially the Class A side, I think Class A is fine. I think we just had MLB Network on right here. They did a whole thing on it. What's wrong with Mayo Class A? I don't think anything's wrong with him. I think he's fine. Like, I think anybody who is losing their mind over Emmanuel Class A and worrying about Emmanuel Class A, it's okay. It's all going to work out. He's going to be fine. You know, the velocity is going to get higher as the temperature gets warmer on top of it. It's going to be fine. Don't worry about it. I think the bullpen is still going to be stellar. God, Cade Smith, once again, holy smokes, that dude is just, he is everything you want to be and then some. So that was really good to see too.
Threw 11 strikes yesterday, 15 pitches.
I got one in-game thing that we definitely need to hit on, but can I be generous first?
Yeah, be generous. All right, Dan Menigan's in today for Jeff. Jeff will be back with us on Monday. Obviously there's a ton of stuff going on right now, but Guardians taking to the field yesterday for the first time. Ben Lively had to get the start in an emergency role because, the next thing you know, your starting pitcher's got food poisoning. That's not good.
Poor dude.
But Lively was there the day before, so they knew there was a chance this could happen. So hopefully Tanner Bibee's back and ready to go for his next start, but we'll see what happens when they hit that spot. So we're kind of doing a little bit of your first thoughts on what you saw in the Guardians-Royals game yesterday, maybe a little overreaction theater. And then there's this other question that kind of is sitting out there. What is success for the Guardians this year? Because it's hard to find anybody that thinks they're coming back and winning the Central. We saw a little bit of that magic touch that they had last year to be able to win yesterday in Kansas City in extra innings. And for a second there, it looked like they were going to give it to the Royals in the ninth an extent. And by the way, didn't the Royals ran themselves out of the inning in the eighth?
Oh, goodness, they did.
I mean, talk about dumb. I mean, if I'm Kansas City, I walk out of yesterday's game going, how did we lose that game? Man, we Little League that game. We'll get one back later in the season where someone else is going to do something as dumb as we did today. But if I'm Kansas City, I'm kind of like, oh, man, what did we do? We just gave that game away. Now, I don't know. Did they give it? I mean, it was still a close game. Maybe they didn't give it, but they gave away a better opportunity than they handed themselves. Although, man, how much fun was it to watch the Guardians hit in the top of the 10th? Whoa, man, that was awesome. That was a lot of fun. So
it was the way it should be. Like,
especially because, they walked
Santana.
Yeah, they walked Santana to get to Manzardo yesterday, and I was like, this guy's hitting the ball pretty good. Are you sure you want to do that? But okay, all right.
We could go full-blown Mr. Burns on that. Previous hitter was a right-hander, and I brought in the left-hander because I'm playing the percentages. It's good managers do to win baseball games.
Yeah.
Mr. Burns told us that also many years ago in that fabulous softball game.
I do remember that.
Of course. Yeah. But there were two things that stood out to the game itself that I want to hit on. One of them, and this might be just like one of those, old man yelling at clouds type of moments.
Mm-hmm.
Can we please call the ball? Just call the ball.
Oh.
Can they please call the ball? I can't handle a whole season of outfielders running into each other and first baseman running into
Thomas
catchers.
When Thomas hit Kwan?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I was looking at
it. I know it's
my
loud
daughter
in there.
Was sitting right. Was my daughter or my son? Or son. My son was like, I was like, why is this even in question? That's a center fielder's ball all the way. Like, we don't even, that's like the easiest rule you can teach a kid.
Yeah.
Hey, if the center fielder can get it, it's their ball. Always. Right?
Just call the ball. That's one. The second one. I can't believe you had Stephen Kwan sacrifice bunt with two runners on and
nobody
go. Out.
Here we go.
That hurt my soul.
Why?
Because you gave up a free out with one of the 20 best hitters in baseball. You told one of the 20 best hitters in baseball, hey, I would rather you not swing the bat. I would rather you give up your at-bat to move the runners 90 feet when you could easily have slapped a double and scored both of them. Like, that was mind-numbing. That hurt my... I was yelling at that because that's just such a
dumb. Let me ask you, what was the result of the play?
A sack fly. That's what you got out of that inning because you bunted. A sack fly. Congratulations.
Well done. Go back to the bunt, and what was the result of the bunt?
Do I need to pull up the percentage tables?
I don't want to see your percentage. I don't want to play your game. I'm asking you.
Do we need to use probability again? It's not that hard.
The probability of hitting into a double play?
It's not with one of the 20 best hitters in baseball? And one of the best pure bat-to-ball skill guys that are walking around in this league.
And they were up, weren't they? They were up at that point. It was 4-3, wasn't it? At the point of the sack bunt, wasn't it?
You could have been up 5-4 if he would have hit a double into the gap. You could have been up 4-4 on a single to left field on a guy who
Up 4-3 when he did the sack bunt? It was 4-3 when he did... What inning was that? Seventh, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they were up 4-3 at that point. So you're saying if you get the hit, then you're up 5-3. Right?
Yeah. It's Stephen Kwan.
Or you go to one out, and you probably can assume that you're probably going to get at least one run out of it your lead a little bit
more. We all remember?
Which also would have kept you out of extra innings if that would have executed the right way.
Do we all remember the guy who flirted with 400 for a little while?
Yeah. And now he's hitting 500.
That's the guy you were like, hey, don't hit this at bat. Just politely put the ball down and run to first so everyone else
it's always
can
me,
get closer.
It's always me over team and Team Menigan. You
That's
get two runners
in the
scoring
name.
Position.
That's why Emmy's right there in the name. It's easy.
And who's up after Kwan?
That would be Jose Ramirez.
Okay, so why? I don't know why that's. I'm like, I am not dying on this hill that he wanted to have a sacrifice bunt.
You bunted yourself out of a big inning. Like I
did you,
could you
have opened up a bigger inning?
You could justify it a little bit more if you were like, okay, we had the bottom of the order do it. Okay, we had the eight hitter do it or the number nine hitter do it. Like, okay, you can convince me how that makes a little bit more sense. But the fact that you did it with a guy who flirted with 400 and you were like, nah, you know what? Your better use isn't doing what you do best, which is putting the bat on the ball and getting singles and pestering pitchers and racking up pitch counts and doing all those things that make Stephen Kwan awesome. No, 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 no. We don't need that here.
Do you play blackjack at all?
We just need you to gently place the ball down.
Do you play blackjack?
A little bit.
Would you ever split tens against a six? No. You take your 20 and you go, and that's kind of where I feel like you would be on the sack bunt. Take your 20 and then watch the dealer bust. I don't have a problem with it. And I understand what you're saying about Stephen Kwan, and I understand your trust because I have the same trust as he does. But you have Jose Ramirez coming up next, and you're trying to get to the end of the game, right? You're trying to win. So you move two runners over, and now you got to. If you start pulling up percentages and stuff like that, I'm not going down this road.
How many double plays did Stephen Kwan ground into last season?
I was going to look that up before I brought this up because I figured that was the part of the argument that could bury me.
How many
double plays did he hit in spring training?
That would be five. That would be five in 2024.
How many opportunities did he have to hit into a double play?
That would be five. I don't have that in front of me.
What if there was only five chances for him into a double play?
I mean,
I'm kidding. Yes, I understand.
That would tell you that the bottom of the lineup really was dreadful.
I can't argue that, but you're also trying to start the season off on the right foot and Maybe you just want to play a little old school baseball. If you want to second guess the manager of the year last year, you knock yourself out, Dan Menigan.
I will second guess the manager of the year because he could have avoided extra innings. He could have avoided using Paul Sewald. He could have avoided all of those different things, all because he decided in that moment that he would rather, for some reason, fill up on fast food instead of holding up for the filet mignon.
I'm going to be honest with you. I'm arguing with you for the point of arguing.
I figured that was the case.
I'm done with that. So,
all right, beautiful.
My bigger question is, what's a success for this team? What is this? To me, winning the Central is a success for this team. No one's expecting them to do anything this year again. No one has faith in the fact that they were able to, you know, be extremely competitive with the Yankees in the ALCS last year. Nobody saw that coming. I think that there's an air of like bitterness from the media against the Guardians this year because they didn't make any major moves. And the one major kind of big move they made to bring in Santana was like a ho-hummer because of his age. Like no one was into it. No one was into it. And they're like, you got rid of your second baseman. He could play some pretty good defense. Did you downgrade at second base? That's why, like that's what they're all looking at. Now, do they have two starters they can count on, I think, that can go out there, you know, when they get their starts to get them a win? Yeah, I feel that way. Do you need a third to make you believe that they're going to win the AL Central? I don't know. You get guys like Lively that went out there yesterday. I'm not – and by the way, did he do his job yesterday?
Yep.
3 runs, 5 innings. That's all we're asking for.
Modern starters, yep. Yeah. Like that's where we are in the modern starting pitching. And I know that probably makes a lot of old school baseball fans lose their minds. But yeah, that's the modern starter. Hey, give me close to 2 times across the order and leave me in a position where my offense can win.
So you're good with it. I'm good with what he did, especially on kind of short notice. He didn't have 2 weeks to sit around and go, I'm the opening day starter. I'm the opening day starter.
I thought he was fine. I thought he did a nice job.
By the way, the most overrated thing, I think, is until you get to must-win games, I think whether you're the number 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 starter, you're the number one starter on the day they hand you the ball. It doesn't matter.
It's a great mindset to have. It's one of my favorite parts of opening day, like in general, is the fact that I can look at all the pitching matchups and it's all the pitching matchups I want to see. Like that's the part of it that's cool to me, is it's all the stuff where I'm like sitting down and going, oh man, this is going to be fun. I can watch, you know, I can watch the best of the best go up against each other. I can see the best of each team go up against each other. Like, that's the part that's cool.
216-474-0092. Keep going.
So to me, what constitutes a success for this season?
Mm-hmm.
Do it again. Like, as funny as this sounds, do it again. I'm not World Series or bust. I'm not you have to win the Central. I'm not you need to win all of the games that you won last year. Do it again. Make the playoffs. Make some teams sweat. Make some teams work. Do it again. Make it so that what we saw last year wasn't a fluke. Make it so that what we saw last year just wasn't luck and an ability to pull out one-run games. Like, do it again. Does that make sense?
Yeah, let's go back and look at the last 3 years, throughout 23, right? They've won, 92 games 2 out of the last 3 years?
Wow.
Should you expect that or not?
It's a tough expectation because the division's getting better. I mean, the Royals are better. You saw it yesterday. That Royals team you went up against yesterday is better than the ones you've seen in a little bit. The Tigers are coming. They gave a scare to the Dodgers a little bit until Shohei had to hit one out. I mean, we'll see what the Twins look like. I'm 50-50 because I don't think Buxton, Correa, and Royce Lewis can stay healthy for long enough in the season to really make them contenders. But the bullpen's going to be good. The starter's going to be pretty good as well. Do it again. I know that's really simplistic, but that's where I am. Just do it again. Prove that it's real. Prove that what you're doing here isn't fluky.
I mean, why don't we expect more out of this team? Because they have a kind of a quiet offseason.
Yeah.
Go back and look at since 2016, they've had 6 years where they won more than 90 games. That should stand for something. So and I'm gonna throw out the COVID year there, so forget about it. It's like 8 out of the last 9 years they won at least 90 games. I mean, I don't know, maybe we should expect more. I want to, but are we letting our expectations and goals for this year be based on what they didn't do in the offseason? To me, that's a little befuddling. 216-474-0092. 216-474-0092. Baskin and Phelps, 92.3 The Fan with Dan Menigan. You know, again, on the road to start it, I think Major League Baseball got it right. Yeah, for the home opener on April 8th, Tuesday, April 8th.
Agreed.
So, you know, the fact they had 80-degree weather yesterday, man, it was perfect for the game. Perfect.
Oh, yeah.
I think they're expecting a little bit of not great weather over the weekend, but not horrible weather either. Just kind of looking at the long-term forecast. And then San Diego is like as perfect as you get. Like, they get June gloom. That's the only thing they get that's bad. And that's because it's a little cloudy in the morning during June. I kill for June gloom being our only weather problem here in Northeast Ohio. So, and then you got Los Angeles. They'll head off there next weekend. So,
oh, wow. You want a little bit of news?
Yeah, give me some news.
Kent State head coach Rob Senderoff signing a 6-year deal to stay with the Golden Flashes.
Oh, he's going to stay.
He's okay. Going to stay.
There was a lot of talk about him going to Fordham over the last couple days. Well, good for them. I mean, I'm happy for him. I'm glad that – I hope he got a – you know, that job is not an easy job. I mean, they had a silly lawsuit against one of their former head coaches who had the opportunity to move on forward. Like, no one in the world I'm still like, I don't understand why that happened. So hopefully, well, good job, Kent State, because you're rebuilding the faith in the program, I think, nationally. I mean, let's be honest, that lawsuit they had a couple years ago against Geno Ford made Kent not only look super cheap, but like, what are they doing? Especially when you were on the heels of, you know, the Elite Eight run, and, you know, that had just happened, I don't know, recently before that, but good for Kent State. So they extended Rob, huh?
Mm-hmm. 6-year deal from what it looks like, according to multiple reports.
And then what? Fordham has the former University of Akron AD is at Fordham now. So it sounded like, you know, there were multiple reports. Well, I don't know if there was multiple. I saw one for sure. There was a report that he was going to Fordham. So he's a good dude. Done a great job with that program. Has been stable. I mean, how often did we see that Kent State job just change over and over? They had good coaches, but when they had success, teams would leave, or coaches would leave all the time. So good for Rob, good for Kent State. I give you a bravo and a pat on the back to my alma mater, which I get critical of sometimes because I just think there are opportunities for that school to be bigger and better with athletics, and sometimes they just drop the ball immensely. But this time it sounds like they did something right, and congratulations to them. There are a couple issues going on with the football team right now. We'll see how that plays out. But good for them. Good for Rob. Good for Rob. I mean,
he's
a good coach who knows what he's doing. And let's face it, I mean, he's playing in one of the most antiquated gyms in the country. You know, they deserve better. I still go back, and I know Jeff and I talk about this every once in a while. I wish there was a way that they could have kept the Coliseum and that Akron and Kent could have shared that venue. Although it's not on campus. That's the problem. Like, yeah. I get it. I understand why you want it on campus. But I also understand that, like, I don't know, Dick Stadium feels like it's 10,000 miles away from campus, too, when you go down to Kent State, too. And, I mean, we sit here and we talk about, you know, Kent or Akron or even Cleveland State sometimes. And Ohio State gets, you know, all the love when football season rolls around because they're the biggest school in the state and they've got a chance to win a national championship. I look at Kent State and I'm like, man, it's either the second or third biggest school in the state most years when it comes to higher education. And I always say, I don't understand why Kent can't be as competitive as schools with smaller enrollment. Like, it just doesn't make sense, but that's an investment in their athletic program. So, again, they made an investment by keeping their coach this time, so good for them. And congratulations to Rob Senderoff and his family on a contract extension there. Good for him.
I will give you...
That was Flash's talk, which we normally don't do a whole lot about.
I know nothing about this, so I'm going to go give you the Blazing Saddles Taggart ditto.
Good job.
That's all. That's what I'm going to do. You did the Hedley Lamar, I'll do ditto.
I thought for sure he was going to Fordham. Like, everything I was reading, I was like, oh, he's out. But good. I like, how about something positive for Kent State Athletics? I like it. Let's take a couple phone calls on the Guardians, too. We're talking about how the season opened, and Anthony's in Cleveland Heights. Heights high!
Heights high!
Heights high!
Heights high!
So, okay, so on the Guardians, a couple things that I jotted down yesterday. You know how one way you win games on the road in Major League Baseball, your pitching staff gives up one walk all game. That's a good thing.
Good point, yep.
The second thing is, on Class A, because I know the freak out has commenced already, His ERA last year was an otherworldly .060. Mm-hmm. Good luck finding another closer that's going to give you that ERA. This, you know, the projections that are out there are around 2.2 to 3, round 3 for an ERA. So there's going to be some regression because there has to be from a .6 ERA.
Sure.
Relax. You know, the guy's still got a 100-mile-an-hour cutter, so that's the second thing I'll say.
Okay.
And then the last thing, you talked about the lineup, so this is going to be my hot take, a little mildly hot take. You can, because you did talk about the lineup and the position
sure.
and so forth. You, Noel did strike out with the bases loaded in the first inning yesterday, mm-hmm. And I just wonder how he would do batting ninth. After Rocchio, before Kwan, Ramirez, Lane Thomas, and Santana. You know, if Rocchio's going to start getting on base more with contact, you know, maybe he gets marginally better pitches there, and that might mean an extra 5 or 7 home runs this year or something of that vicinity. That's my only thing is how he would do protected like that, especially if Rocchio starts making contact. Then they might give him, you know, you're talking a little bit marginally better pitches that might be a benefit to him.
If anything, might get him to, you know, maybe start walking a little bit more, swing and miss a little bit less. But that's always kind of been his MO. You know, he swings a bunch, but when he gets a hold of it, it flies. I don't know. I could get behind that. The only thing with it is I feel like you're treating him like a catcher, and I don't think he's a catcher. You know, and by treating him like a catcher, I mean the idea that it's either home run or bust with this guy, and anytime he's standing on first base, you're like, oh, wow, a bonus. And I don't think Noel is that bad.
He's fun. Jess in Hudson. Hi, Jess.
All right, Jess.
Hey, how you doing, fellas?
Good.
Hey,
what's going on, man?
I got a couple comments about the guards, but yeah. First of all, I got to say I'm driving along, and it must be my lucky day. Like, I found a $10 bill in the couch cushions.
Nice.
You know, I'm surfing the radio dial, and I stumble onto you guys, and you're actually talking about baseball instead of jabbering on about the Browns like usual. But thank you.
Anyway. Oh, that's okay. Oh, so you called. You wanted to talk about you know, what was going on yesterday at Chipotle. That's why you called.
Yeah, yeah.
I just want to make sure
that may or may not have been the first hour of this show.
That's all right.
That's the case. I'm sorry.
So, how do you feel about Kirk Cousins, Jess? Keep going.
Who?
Keep going.
All right, so, yeah, getting to the game yesterday, I agree that Kwan bunting in that situation with two on, nobody out, was ill-advised because you're taking the bat out of his hands.
You're good people.
And they were down by 2 runs. I think I misspoke earlier, but they were down 2 runs at that point.
In any case, but what was more baffling was that Quintero didn't give Hosey a free pass with first base open.
That's a good
point.
That's why I
thought the bunt was stupid, because, you know, they're just going to pitch around Hosey. Anyway,
but it's that whole thing of, I got my ace on the hill in Cole Reagans. He's settled down a little bit. He's starting to look better. Let's see what he can do against the best of the best. Like, I can kind of see Quintero's thought process there, but you're right. I probably, you know, second guessing the manager and all, I probably would have walked him.
Yeah. And, you know, speaking of the Hosey not getting pitches, you know, they, for some inexplicable reason, they dumped a guy, a number 4 hitter with over 30 homers, over 100 RBIs over the offseason, for a ham sandwich. Why? I just have no earthly idea why they would do such a thing.
So, Jess, the only thing that I've seen on this and have read on it was the idea that they weren't going to sign him long term. And so they were trying to get something for it, and that was the best something that was available. Trust me, I saw he had a pretty good game in Arizona last night, too.
Well, good for him. Good for him. I wish him well. I love the guy, man. He was, you know, he had a good heart, a good soul, but you couldn't get more for him than some rag-arm pitcher with an over 6 ERA? That's hard to believe. At least keep him on the roster. Trade him in the middle of the season if you're out of it.
He might have more value. Yeah, Jess, that's a great point. Jess and Hudson, thank you. Appreciate your phone call. 216-474-0092. 216-474-0092. Okay, other opening day observations, my friend.
I love the uniforms. I'm thrilled we're back to the old print on the uniforms. I'm thrilled with all of those things. That was the other thing that stuck out just watching around the league.
Whose uniforms I love? Dodgers. Which, the Dodgers?
Yeah.
Do you like those?
Like the golds?
Yeah, I did like the golds.
Interesting. The lady friend was not sold on the golds. I was fine with it. It's good. But I also really like the Dodger blue. I think the Dodger blue is one of the coolest colors in baseball. So I think they'll go back to it and all that stuff. I hated the Royals hats. I thought the powder blues looked cool. I hated the white with the gold on it that the Royals had because it made it hard to see the KC. That drove me nuts. Trying to think of the other stuff that stood out to me. Good for Adley Rutschman hitting two bombs yesterday, too. Can you tell I had like four screens going with baseball games and I'm scrolling through my head?
How many? I mean, by the way, I think the light blue Kansas City hat looks like a softball hat.
I didn't like the white in front of it because I couldn't see the KC like that. And I think the Kansas City Royal logo looks really cool. Like the KC with the in the cross.
Did you see their spring training hat that had the wave through the middle of it?
Shoot. I don't believe
They're
did.
They're hot sellers here, if you can look at my screen.
I'll have to find it. Yeah, I don't know if I can twist your... Hang on, let me see.
You can see it. It's kind of another softball kind of hat,
I wouldn't rush on that one.
Yeah, that's like Kevin's bar.
Mackenzie Gore threw really well for the Nats. That was cool to see. It was good to see him get some run. I hope he throws well this season. He's really fun. He was a big prize in the Juan Soto trade for them. I'm trying to think of other stuff that stood out to me. It was just great to have it back. Honestly, too, in the hot take zone that's going to make you grumpy, Andy.
Yeah, go ahead.
Joe Buck did a really nice job on that game with the Yankee Brewer game. I thought Joe Buck did a really nice job.
I didn't catch any of it, so just so you know, I'm just making you feel better.
In the hot take zone of people who can't stand Joe Buck, I thought he did well.
All right, I'm going to throw you should I do it right now? This is food for thought. Maybe if we get a chance, we'll come back.
But more than anything, I think the number one thing I would say for yesterday... The old uniforms are back. The big letters are back.
Yeah.
The big numbers are back. They looked like baseball uniforms, and to my knowledge, nobody ripped their pants.
Congratulations. Excellent job.
That's the bar. Don't rip your pants.
All right, let's talk Cavs when we come back. Man, was that game, like, over-refereed yesterday or what? They won. I'm not complaining, but I just got tired of seeing the officials in the second half. 216-474-0092. When we come back, Danny Green, super friend of the show, Odyssey Sports, NBA Insider, next.